You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Albert Mohler, Brian Wolfmiller, Hans Feeney, and Will Wheaton at the 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 12th and Saturday, June 13th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2020 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 12th and 13th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Sadly, the far left is actively working to erase our God-given rights, shut down faith-based charities, ban religious believers from the public square, and silence Americans who believe in the sanctity of life.
One could say, well, people who hold religious beliefs have done bad things. Well, that's also true of people who've held all sorts of other beliefs. Think, for example, of the atheistic government of the Soviet Union, in which millions were put in gulags and were harmed and tortured in the name of instituting secular government.
I think to put Susan Anthony's proper perspective historically is to understand that she is the publisher of a pro-life newspaper.
You're saved not by your own machination, your own way of doing things, as they try to do with Abraham and Hagar, but rather you are saved by what God does, His promise.
This is Mike from Illinois, and Lutherans Marching for Life, Love, Issues, Etc.
Even as adults, we know that these devices that have become necessary for our life, our work, our socializing, they're doing something to us. We don't know exactly what it is. It changes the way we interact with one another. It changes the way we consume our information. There is something addictive about the act of scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. We spend a lot of our time doing that on these devices. What does this activity bring about in the life of a child when a child spends hours scrolling and scrolling and scrolling with their eyes and their minds on a screen? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Friday afternoon, January the 31st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to talk about a recent study on children, screen time, and brain activity. Auguste Mayraw will be our guest. We will be reviewing the movie 1917 with Pastor Ted Geese. Dr. Gene Edward Veith joins us for part two in a series we're doing with him on a Lutheran response to post-Christian culture. We'll talk about science. Joy Pullman will join us to talk about two issues. One, two banks defund school choice in Florida, and U.S. Attorney General William Barr and his time with the press lately. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We have four soundbites to play for you. When we have played them in the last half hour of the program, you can vote by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943. You can send us an email if you'd like to vote in advance, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc, or vote in advance at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to discuss a recent study on children's screen time and brain activity, Auguste Mayraw. He's an English teacher in Dallas. He has a master's degree in educational leadership. He's senior editor of The Everyman and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "New Brain Scans Show Screen Time Makes Kids Dumber." Auguste, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hello.
Many parents give their preschool and school-aged children screens in one form or another. You call them electronic pacifiers. Why do you do that?
Well, because they quiet down the kids like a pacifier. So I think that's the great temptation, the great appeal of iPads or iPhones, is that when kids are on them, they're just focusing on them. They're not really curious about what's around them, and they're not moving around. They're not making noise. And so I think parents, when they want to get a break, or teachers, when they want to get a break, really do like that option to just give them these devices that keep them busy. So that's why I call them pacifiers. I mean, it's like what you would do with a baby. You give them a pacifier and they stop crying or they quiet down.
What did a recently published study show us about the brains of children and screen time?
So they took brain scans of small children, I think it's like toddlers, I guess, and it showed that there was a concentration of white matter in brains of kids who did not go on screens, and there was a diffusion or scattering of white matter in brains of kids who did look at screens a lot. And the white matter of the brain is what connects the gray matter, I guess, in brains. So meaning, like, kids with a high concentration of white matter are able to make connections faster, focus better, and their brains are just faster, stronger processors, which allows them to learn and grow and develop better. When the white matter is diffused, making those connections is harder, and therefore the brain does not work as quickly, and it's just not as capable as brains that are structured differently when there's no screens. So that's what those scans really show it. They show what's happening in the brain to cause kids without screens performing better versus kids who are on the screens all the time performing worse. This is why it is, because of what it shows in the brain.
So what in particular, as an educator, would you think that would mean for a children's mental flexibility and creativity?
So the ability to focus, the ability to learn, the ability to follow along. I mean, this kind of comes up pretty easily in communication, just like following directions. So for little kids, I mean, that's really what a kindergarten, first grade, kind of early grades teacher is looking for. And so some kids adapt very quickly, and those are kids that have not been scrambled, you know, by the screen. And they're able to kind of distinguish tone. They're able to distinguish certain ideas better. And even those basic skills that you learn, like reading, computation, remembering things, just social interactions. When you have a kid that has been spent most of their time just on screens, they have a hard time adapting to that kind of environment. Like, they don't know how to follow directions, or it takes them a while to process it. And so they're not making the progress, not only academically, but also even socially, because even social interaction requires your brain to make a lot of choices and decisions and connections. I mean, a lot of it's subconscious or whatever. So that's what happens when a kid is overexposed to screen time and doesn't form those connections and their brain doesn't work as fast. They struggle in a social setting and in an academic setting.
You're an English teacher. Have you noticed this in your own experience in the classroom?
Yeah, definitely. And I wrote an article a while ago, maybe a year ago, talking about this. But kids who have screen addictions have a hard time focusing. It sounds simple, but they have a hard time focusing. They have a hard time remembering things. And so this makes them struggle with comprehension. So when they get texts that require them to sit still and pay attention and, you know, kind of make connections in their mind, like, oh, this is the setting, this is the character, these words mean this, this paragraph means this, they break down. I mean, well, break down, they slow down, and they have a very hard time. Versus kids, and, you know, I teach AP groups and I teach remedial groups. And my AP, advanced placement groups, what I notice about them is that they are less stuck on their screen. Some do have, like, you know, kind of screen addictions, but a lot of them don't. And so they're able to kind of just pick up on things much, much faster. If I show them a sample of something, they can follow that sample of writing, which is what we do a lot. If it's like a reading thing, they pick up on what they know and what they don't know, and they make connections, and they're able to kind of see the organization of things, and they're able to focus. They can sit still for longer, and that's critical. And they remember, you know, I mean, that's the thing, just remembering and focusing, and that's the kind of the elements of comprehension. So when their brains are working, they can do that kind of work. But when their brains are scattered and diffused and the connections aren't really there, there are a lot of breakdowns and stopping points. So you have to kind of break down texts and make things simpler for them if they're going to try to, you know, build their fluency in reading.
Over time, you use the analogy in your piece of a child who isn't given an opportunity to participate in athletics over time. So over time, what do you anticipate? Say, can they come back from the damage that is done? And it looks like physiological damage that's done from too much screen time.
I mean, you can come back from it. But it's hard. You know, you make it that much harder. It's a lot easier to gain weight and get out of shape than it is to lose weight and get in shape. What will be best is that you're always in shape and never have to kind of have like some Rocky-style montage, you know? So, and I kind of think of myself, actually. I watched a lot of screens as a kid. You know, I came from a big family. My mom was working. My dad was, you know, working in another city. And so I was placed in a daycare, and we watched a lot of TV at the daycare. I watched a lot of TV at home. And so I wasn't naturally gifted. And so I really had to learn grit and discipline to really overcome some of the gaps that I had in my own thinking. I mean, eventually your brain heals because the brain is pretty plastic. And so I think that gives hopes to adults and older kids, which I wanted to include in the piece, but I mean, that kind of gets into a different subject, but you can recover from it, but it's a lot easier never to have that problem in the first place. And so my feeling is that when you're a kid like myself and you've had kind of like overindulgence of screens, and I think it's much worse now than it was even with me. I watch television, and it was bad television, but you know, whereas kids today have this customized, you know, personal iPad in front of them. And so I think that when you're entering with that kind of disadvantage, I think a lot of times schools will try to kind of mend those problems and fix those problems, but it prevents you from kind of doing the advanced work earlier. And so extended over time, you know, you have kids kind of going on a certain track, which could be, you know, kind of the regular track or minimum requirement track versus kids who are in AP tracks, college-bound tracks. And the difference really just started happening at the beginning of, you know, kindergarten, where some were gaining notice and they were getting better practice and they were getting more opportunities to practice, whereas the ones who came into school with a disadvantage did not get that practice. And so they continually do something on an easier level and they don't make as nearly as much progress. And so, I mean, I sometimes think about economics where you say, okay, the rich get richer, like, and the poor, you know, kind of stay the same or get poorer. In education, it kind of works that way. Like, gifted, smart kids get way, way smarter over time. And, you know, kids that are not gifted or they have disadvantages, they get better, but not nearly as much. And so and that's kind of the impact that screens seem to make. They kind of set this early tone, and then one has a more challenge, more opportunities, and one has less challenge and fewer opportunities. And so you have to compensate through, like, additional discipline and that kind of thing.
How do you respond to a parent who says, I use my phone a lot, I feel fine, I still think clearly? What would you say?
Well, I mean, I get that a lot. And to that I say, well, parents are usually working. Maybe their job requires them to learn, but maybe it doesn't. I think parents suffer from this if they're just on their phone all the time. I think it hurts your social life. I think it hurts your, just like with kids, ability to focus, ability to kind of retain a lot of information. And so you may be fine as an adult if you already have your job and your tasks are pretty monotonous or pretty repetitive, and many jobs are. But if your job requires you to be creative and requires you to socialize with more people and be, you know, think on your feet and to learn new skills, then no, having a phone addiction or being on your screen all the time is going to hurt you. For a kid growing up, this is all the more important, right? Because a kid growing up, they're learning. They have no choice but to learn. They have no choice but to grow. And so if they have a screen addiction, it's going to impact them way more when their job is to learn. And a screen is apparently, you know, kind of hurting their equipment. You know, your equipment is your brain. And so you want to make sure you have good equipment to do that kind of work of learning. And so I would tell that to a parent, just saying, well, you may not be affected, but you are. But really, your child is being heavily affected because the work they're doing is primarily intellectual and primarily about growing and adapting and learning. So, no, just saying it's all good for everybody, it really isn't. It hurts relationships and it hurts just your mind.
How do you respond to a parent who says, you know, children do poorly in school for all kinds of reasons not related to screen time?
In many ways, I agree. You know, if you have an unstable home life or the kid gets nervous during tests, and these types of things, I mean, I'll allow for that. But I think, you know, in addition to that, I think we do really need to look at the technology component or the screen component. And I think parents tend to neglect that. I mean, actually, a good story that kind of illustrates this. I mean, I remember having a student who struggled with ADHD. And granted, you know, and I'm not the type to say, oh, that's not a real thing. I mean, people have ADHD, it prevents them from focusing, and it's something that you have to work with or work through. But my other question was, like, the student also struggled with screen addiction. This person was always on their phone and all that. And so I said, you know, before we start looking at therapeutic options or medication and things like that, why don't we take away the phone? You know, I mean, this is obviously a distraction. This is obviously preventing them from focusing. And, you know, they may very well struggle with ADHD. They probably do. But, you know, the phone is exacerbating the issue. And I think a lot of parents kind of make that decision. They don't want to face the fact, like, look, if our kids are struggling at school and they can't focus, I mean, giving them a phone, just it's terrible. And we should probably take that away first and then consider, you know, what are the real things that are helping and what are hurting.
Why are these images from the brain scans different from the usual psychological studies on screen time?
The visual is everything. And so in my article, I talk about, in debates about abortion, I think a picture is worth a thousand words, but it really does have some power. When you see the baby in the womb in an ultrasound, it's hard to just say, oh, that's a clump of cells, or, oh, that's not a person. You see it. And you can see what happens when abortion happens, and it's horrific. So I think in the same way, although not so gruesome, when you look at the brain, you know, you could say, oh, well, a kid suffers, you know, mentally and intellectually, cognitively, when they're on screens. But when you see it, you can't deny it. You can come up with different excuses. You can come up with different conclusions. When we're just talking about cause and effect, you can say, well, yes, the kid is struggling or an adult is struggling. It could be all sorts of causes. But I think when you look at the brain scan, you can't do that anymore. You're like, well, no, we see obviously one of those causes is being on the phone, being on the screen all the time. And that really is physically affecting the brain, preventing it from working as well as it does. And so, you know, some of the things that we observe are the logical outcomes of that very physical effect.
We have watched the screen enter the classroom. What are the implications for screen-based education and increased use of tech in the classroom?
I think we're finding that it's pretty harmful. And I say that as a person who's worked in a district that's really tried this. And so, no, I think you see certain districts kind of wising up to it. And so they're starting to prohibit phones. Our district has now kind of given teachers that freedom. Like, if they want to use phones, they can. If they don't, they shouldn't. You know, they don't have to. So we set our own policies. I mean, I'm pretty anti-tech, obviously. The impact is pretty bad. And more not because, you know, there might be ways to use technology in the classroom in an effective way that's not like a distraction, not as a pacifier. But the distraction pacifier element is definitely, I think schools are going to wise up to it. I think a lot of districts already have. I think these charter schools or private schools, these Montessoris like the Waldorf Montessori in California, they're already aware of this. They know that screens are addictive. They know that they distract. They know that they kind of prevent development. And so I think schools are going to have to start looking at themselves as kind of these detox centers for that kind of activity. I think trying to incorporate it and use the technology to really facilitate and strengthen learning more often than not backfires. And I mean, actually, and it's kind of interesting, like the poorer the district or poorer the school or poorer the student body, the more they try to look at the tech and see if they can do something with it. Like a lot of these kind of wealthier schools and wealthier student populations, like the families are pretty emphatic about taking away the phone, taking away this, because they know it leads to mediocrity, which is kind of what Steve Jobs said, which is funny because, I mean, he created this machine. So he says, I don't give my kids iPads because it's going to make them mediocre. And so the fact that he says this and practices this should make us kind of wonder, like, well, why are we putting this in classrooms?
Auguste Mehra is an English teacher in Dallas. He has a master's degree in educational leadership. He's senior editor of The Everyman and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled, New Brain Scans Show Screen Time Makes Kids Dumber. You'll find a link to this column and to The Everyman at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Auguste, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next, we'll be reviewing the movie 1917 with Pastor Ted Geese. We're going through those films nominated for Best Picture. Stay tuned. Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Now that you have packed away the Christmas ornaments and chrismons for the season, it's time for some contemplation. Those chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam. The glitter has dropped off and they're being held together with toothpicks. Don't celebrate another Christmas hearkening back to the age of glitter balls. Enter the 2020s with Ad Crucem's beautifully designed and lovingly made Christmons. We offer all the old designs and a whole lot of new ones. Visit adcrucem.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
Solid. Serious. Substantive. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Epiphany season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Epiphany season, 24/7, LutheranPublicRadio.org.